All right, so we'll get started. So I thought we'd work one more example from chapter 8. As we talked last time, we kind of had decided that it was worth our probably better use of our time to work through some examples and explore that chapter 8 constrained coordinates rather than just give a high-level overview of alternative methods. I do encourage you to still take a look at that next chapter, chapter 9 in the book. At least be aware that those other methods exist. The other thing to be aware of is that the methods we've talked through so far are at least most directly applicable to discrete systems, meaning they're lumped masses. Right? So we haven't done any kind of continuum deformation or anything like that. So that's a whole separate category of modeling. And in fact, we have a continuum mechanics course that you guys could take. Dr. Taylor has been teaching it in the past few semesters, or past few times it's been offered. So our example here is we're going to work today for the first half or so of class. It's example 8.7 from your book. It is similar to 6.9. I think it's worked to 6.9, something very, very similar with using Newton-Euler. So you could take and compare the two. Let me make that note. I think it's 6.9. If you look the 8.7 up in the book, it points exactly to it. 6.9 question mark, I think is that. But Luther Ginsburg mentions it in his workup of this problem. So what we have here are two collars on bars. This bar here, the collar at point B is frictionless, and it is at angle beta from horizontal. Okay. The collar, which we'll call at point A, kind of this other collar, the other side of the bar, that bar does have friction. Okay. And is connected to ground by a spring constant K on one side. Collars A and B are connected by a bar of length L. And then the angle of that bar from horizontal is phi. The collars have mass and the bar has mass, all m. So they're all equal in mass. The springs are equilibrium length. So what do we want to call that? When phi is zero. And really what we're going to set up in the first half is really just determining the equations of motion. The rest of this example falls in the book when he's exploring some computational methods if you're looking to write a solver of your own, basically. So we're not going to talk really about the second half of what this problem would be, mainly just determining equations of motion. Let's see. I need to say anything else. Mass. Yep, that's all. All right. How many degrees of freedom does the system have? One. Why?
I mean, everything is determined by the angle phi, like the distance from the edge.
Yeah, exactly right. So everything, so we have 1 degree of freedom. You can describe everything by phi. All right. How many coordinates are we going to need to use to describe the system for the equation's motion, though?
Two.
Why?
Because we have to account for the constraint of the friction.
Yeah, so we need to, this is one of the problems where we need to include the constraint forces for that friction. Like we need to know the forces acting here that are causing that friction. Those need to be included in the equations of motion. Good. All right. So given all that, where do we start this problem? Coordinate systems. What's a good choice here? Good choices, maybe.
Probably like a fixed one? Just
a fixed one? Sure. I'm going to do one that actually has... I'm going to be a little bit careful with my origin here, because we'll need to figure out some distances later. I'll do a fixed frame like that, where the x-axis is kind of lies along the bar that A slides along, and the origin O is actually the where that would intersect with the other bar. Okay. Any other frames that might be useful?
One along L
might help us. How would we want to do that one? X this way? We can do that, and let's just draw him here. Doesn't necessarily have to be that. Y1. And I'm going to say, hey, we might need one kind of in this guy, too. Along that bar. Could be helpful. So we have X, Y, Z. X1, Y1, Z1. And again, for the last time this term, I actually write these notes myself, so I'm solving them for myself. Right. These kind of notes. All right, what's next? Picking some generalized coordinates? Sure. Let's do that. That'll fit here. What do I want to choose here? We said we can describe it with just 1 degree of freedom. Right? It's just 1 degree freedom system, but we need 2 generalized coordinates because we have that constraint we have to account for. So what do we want to choose? Some distance by collar A.
Probably from where you have the origin.
Yeah, we could do that distance. One option. Okay. Any other options? We could do something similar, and in fact, what we will do to match the book is do something similar here. For the B collar, and call that S. The thing that using S gets you is now you can write, you can relate the spring deflection to phi. Whereas if you use R, you can't really do that as readily. In phi, we said, was kind of the degree of freedom of the system. So that there's some advantage maybe to using S as the kind of constrained coordinate, if you will. Okay, so we're going to use phi and that distance S. All right, what's next?
Free body
diagrams. How many bodies do we have?
Three.
We said they all have mass, so we have to think about them all. That guy. That guy, that guy. What kind of forces do we have?
We have gravity and the normal.
gravity, which is mg, they're all m. We have some normal, let's call that nb for the normal at point B. What else is that b? Yeah, there's some kind of reaction stuff here, which I'll just, and that's of course acts on the other body too. Let's call that rb. Okay. What else do we have? Someone's next body, the bar itself. What do we have?
Gravity.
Where's gravity act?
The center.
Center of mass. And we're going to need that point, right? So if we call that center of mass, let's call him G. So we have, we already kind of drew the reaction over here. We'll have maybe some similar reaction over that pen. Anything else on the bar?
No.
Okay. What do we have on the collar at A?
Gravity.
Gravity. I will draw that. Draw it off-center here to make it fit. And it's just mg since all the masses are m. What else do we have?
Spring force.
Got some spring force. Which way do we want to draw that? I'm going to draw that this way. Because an increasing s or theta makes that spring expand. It's going to want to pull the collar back. That's kind of how I get to the... That's how I do my arrows for spring force. And as you hopefully remember, it doesn't matter which way I draw the arrow as long as I get the magnitude right to match. All right, what else?
Normal.
There's some normal at A.
And some friction. That
and, yep.
The opposite direction of increasing phi.
Increasing phi. I'm going to draw it. Could do it that way, it doesn't matter, right? That sign comes out in the wash as long as you get the magnitude right. I'm going to draw it this way because that matches my notes, and I drew it that way to match the book, basically. So we're not so inconsistent with the book. It's easy to follow both. Okay. Anything else? Okay. That gets us there for a free body diagram. What is next?
Energies.
Sure. Okay, if we think kinetic energy first, what do we have?
1/2 mv dot mv, which would end up being s dot.
Okay. Leave that there for now. So that's kind of the B collar. And I'll put parentheses to help us picture what comes from what. Which I will, again, will often do for myself in the notes to kind of group bodies together. It's kind of easy for me to see what's going on 6 months after I do it for the first time. I'm writing the paper up. What else we have?
The same thing for A.
So that's the other really easy one. So we got kind of collar B, collar A, and we got a third body to worry about. So what's the terms that come from that?
So the first half is the same thing, but VG.
VG, right.
And then plus 1/2 of ICZ.
Omega the bar, how can we describe that here? Planar problem, nice and easy for us to look at and get to.
Omega Z. That's V dot.
It's V dot, yeah. Planar problems are nice. All right, there's all our terms we need. So we need to start figuring out what those velocities are, I guess. All right. So VB. just S dot in small j. All right. What is VA? Tell me.
Well, we could assume it, but.
Oh, what's the geometry here tell you?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Of course. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. How do we get to VA? Do I have a point of velocity on that rigid body defined already? Okay, so I can write right, two points on the same rigid body. B is here too. Right? Okay, so we got VB. What's that omega in this equation?
V dot minus V dot.
Minus V dot. I'm going to write that in capital K. It could be in any of those K's. We'll just keep it in cap K for right now. What is... that guy? What's that? L in, could be L in J1, right? Because it's from, we did the X1, Y1 there, right? That's the one that was along the bar. Okay. So we have right now in that velocity equation three different frames that are all showing up, right? Which frames are going to be the easiest to really to start describing our forces in is one way to kind of figure out which frame we might want to get everything into.
In big
yeah, the capital XYZ, right? We got gravity straight down. This normal force, the ones we're going to need to solve for over here are in kind of easily oriented within the capital XYZ frame. So let's do that. In this case, we have minus L... times what? What do we have in the capital frame? It's not so hard to get to. What's the geometry here? Yeah, so it's from A relative to B is in the, actually that's in the positive. Break those terms up like we normally do. It's actually L cosine phi, right, in the I direction. Right, and it's sine phi below it. All right. And then what's this guy?
Well, you're already in the, is it big J or is it little?
That's tiny J.
Tiny J, okay.
Tiny J.
So it'll be the same thing as just using beta as instead. That one, but you use beta instead.
But using beta instead. Not quite. The direction's different, right? We got a minus. This is in the positive. So you got to switch signs too. But pretty close. So.
Okay.
And then we could write VA. Which I'll just do. We have VB defined, VA, we need to know VG. How do we get to VG?
The same way we got to VA.
Same way we got to VA?
But
do you see any, yeah, do you see any shortcuts there? What's different? If we wrote this VG equation, we'll do it. What's actually different?
Just
this guy, right? So what can we say about that? What is that?
1/2.
Yeah, it's just half, right? So if I look at that and they're in the same direction but it's just half the length, so that just means that hey, this is L over 2 instead of L. I can skip a lot of math. Right, that's one of those places where trying to keep in mind what you're actually solving for rather than just blindly following steps, you know, save us a little bit of math at least. All right. G, I, Z, Z. We can leave that as I, Z, Z. All right. So I think that gives us all the terms we need to know for the kinetic energy, right? So we can move on to potential. What kind of potential energy do we have?
Let's put our data on capital X.
So we have some gravitational potential, so we can say, hey, let me make that look. Gravity is going to be that bar, I agree with that. So we have to write the gravitational potential then for all three of our bodies. So let's do that. Let's talk about the first. It's going to be mg times something to get the gravitational potential of Koehler at B. And what is that?
L sine B.
Phi
for B.
For B. L sine phi. Does that give it? I'm going to say that's not a good choice, and hang on just a second for why.
Okay.
How else could we describe it? Yeah, so we could use something similar for S. So that's kind of the Koehler B. And we're going to loop back in 2 minutes about why you would want to do it that way instead of relative to this guy. So that is it for Koehler B. How about the bar? So it's going to be mg, and there's some kind of height, right? And I'm going to say let's write it, and again I'll explain why. this is what we're going to want to do. That. Okay, now comes the explanation. We're going to need a term for color A. Why? Even though it's at the, as we've drawn it, at the gravity datum.
Spring?
We have a separate spring term that's coming. Yep. Because, basically, for these constraint forces to show up, we have to let that guy be free to deviate. Okay, so, by choosing the set of constraint coordinates, you let each one of your generalized coordinates be free, basically. So you don't enforce the constraint necessarily, or you can't assume the constraint is satisfied in your potential equation. So if you do phi here, that doesn't actually give you the height, because you don't know the height of this guy. So all these guys were working from O rather than working from the height of the A collar. You guys follow that? Right. So if you could choose a set of constraint coordinates, you have to let them and have constraints enforcing that they're going to follow, and you're going to include constraint forces later. You have to let them be free so that the constraint forces actually act. Right. So for example, in this guy here, we don't care about this one, so we've chosen S along this guy. He's not acting. If we wanted to include this normal force, we also have to let this vary in that direction. But we don't have to. So we're not working on it. So in this case, it looks like this. Oops, that's actually parentheses 2. And again, that gets us from the origin down to A. So there's all our gravitational potential terms. Put those in square brackets to remind us. And I'm going to put it here rather than go way over there. We also have what? A spring potential. Mg.
At the very end.
There's an S there, right? And an S there. I thought about warning you guys because I was doing that all through when I wrote this example. I was losing S's. Start writing an S and fill out sign. So we have spring potential is just that, right? Right? Where delta is the displacement of that spring from its equilibrium length. What is delta? How do we get the delta?
So L minus, and then another set of parentheses.
Okay.
L cosine phi minus S cosine beta.
Okay, how are you getting to that? What's your...
So I'm looking at, like, the whole triangle, like, if you extended past mm-hmm. that bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that would be, that bottom part would be L cosine phi, and then I'm just subtracting what's past bar, which would be S cosine beta.
What's past?
Does that make sense?
Well, it's right up what you had. Tell me what it is.
So it would be
L, you said?
L and then minus.
L minus, not parentheses.
Yeah.
You're thinking about it much differently than I did. That's why I want to write it and see if we get to the same point.
So
mm-hmm.
minus, and then parentheses, L cosine phi minus S cosine beta, which I think
that is what I get to.
Okay.
Well, let's see. So, and the reason I kind of went down my path is I've made a lot of mistakes trying to do it that way. So, basically what we need is kind of the And what's the equilibrium length minus the current position, right? So if I look at that equilibrium, really what that equilibrium we've said is really just R of A relative to O when the angle is zero. Right, that's our spring equilibrium position of point A. Right? So if I do that, I can, well, we have to write R of A relative to O. So that, let's write the general term first. So delta is really this, right? So R of A, O evaluated at the equilibrium, but this is equilibrium length minus that. So let's write R of A relative to O is what? And we want to track this way again, right? So okay, right, and I'll just copy it quickly. Okay, so at phi equals zero, what does that guy evaluate to? Phi equals zero. Why just that? Why do we lose those S terms? Yeah, we said S when basically, based on this geometry, right? When phi goes to zero, it's pulling collar B back to the origin. So S is zero then at that point too. Okay. So then if we need to evaluate this in the general case, right, you can look this minus that, and you will end up, I think, with what we have there. This way, V minus, yeah, as goes on. Plus S cosine beta, minus minus, yep, we got the same thing.
Potential hinge.
Good question.
We don't assume that A
that's right.
is fixed, so then do we have to account for that in the spring?
Yes, no, right. So I think if we're looking at the spring is just acting in this direction, so we're kind of assuming that that it's always acting that way. So you're right in that we're kind of mixing assumptions a little bit. So depending on what you're really trying to do is the answer to that. Do I really, you know, even, do it, am I letting it vary where this can be up here? Then yeah, that's going to change a lot. If I'm looking at only small deviations, possibly in A, I still have normal force and friction. Right, so we're kind of embedding that assumption that, yeah, it can vary, but it's only kind of tiny. So that the vertical displacement doesn't really contribute that much to the spring potential. It's dominated by the elongation in that I direction. Yeah, we had the same thing. The reason I, again, the reason I've done it, I went this way and was explicit about this, once you get out of a classroom setting, the extra 5 minutes to walk through this and make sure you got it right is worth the time, generally. So we got there, and so spring potential, take that guy, square it, and we got the potential energy for the complete system. Good deal. So then we have our Lagrangian. What else do we need?
Virtual work at A.
Or virtual work just in general. Which means we're going to need something about displacement at A, because we have minus those two forces are acting. There. Do we have any other non-conservative forces we need to worry about?
No.
No, why not? We got this normal force over here. Why do we not need to worry about that? We have these reaction forces. Why do we not need to worry about those?
Because they're not doing work.
Not doing virtual work in this case, right? So this collar, this point, is always acting perpendicular to that guy. The dot product would be zero. And then these guys are internal, right? They're just constraint force. We can ignore those. So the only forces that they're doing any virtual work are the normal and friction forces at point A. Okay. So then we need to figure out what the virtual displacement of point A is.
Since we can assume that A doesn't travel vertically along that bar, would that apply that B also doesn't?
No.
No? Okay.
We could if we cared about what B is.
Okay.
All right. But what we're saying is, hey, B is always moving in S. Okay. There's no motion of B that way. Okay. So how do I get to the virtual displacement of point A? Yeah, I have that equation for it. It gives me everything I need right here, right? So I have, we'll write it. Copied everything correctly, and we got to virtual displacement of point A. So just replacing all my total time derivatives with virtual displacements in those directions. Phi dot cosine.
Yeah, the phi dot still, and that should be an L.
It should be an L. You are right. Thank you. So then our virtual work. That dot product. We end up with that guy. And then, of course, we have to collect some terms. Let's do phi. And again, you might want to hold off just a second copying this. I can't see anyway, I guess. Got the sign wrong somewhere, I think. Nope. FA cosine time. Phi. That should be it. Okay. So what does that give us? Yeah. Generalized forces. Yep. Which we usually write as capital Q. Q1. Q2. right, what's left? Yes, exactly. So we've said we're including these constraint forces, which means we need to include that constraint equation explicitly in the system we're using to solve the equation for the dynamics, for the response of the system. So what is it? How do we get to that? Some kind of relationship between S and phi. Right. How can we do that?
So S sine beta equals L sine phi.
I agree with that. So, we look at both of these guys, we know that this height has to be the same, whether we define it using S or we define it using phi. Right? That height is that height. So we know then that S sine beta equals L sine phi. What kind of constraint is that? Holonomic, why?
I'm not sure.
Okay. That's one characterization. It is holonomic. What else can we say about it?
It's a position.
It's a configuration constraint. It's a position constraint. What form do we want this constraint equation n if we're going to include it in our equation of motion?
You need to get the
Yeah, so what form do I need to get it in?
A1.
Yep, okay. So I need some velocity term, so how do I get to that? So I can write it this way. Certainly I can write the config constraint this way. But that still doesn't get me to the right form yet. Right? Because remember that form needs velocities. That's a velocity constraint to get this that form. So I can just take the total time derivative of this, right? With respect to total time derivative of this, B is not changing, so that term just gets me there. L is not changing, so that second term now I've taken that configuration constraint and written it as a velocity constraint.
Could you just have gotten that by taking
Yeah, you should be able to get to that too. The velocity has to be the same both ways. Yeah.
That's both.
Yeah. Yeah. The velocity of B has to be the same whether I describe it with this or that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you probably can. You should be able to get to it there.
Yeah.
So the same way. I think that's gonna be a little bit more math for you though, going down that road. So that gets us to a velocity constraint. And that is going to be one of the equations we need to include. As equations of motion. What are the other two? Yeah, just the Lagrangian part. I'll write those here and then orange box them so they stand out. So I take for each one of my generalized coordinates. So the three orange boxes are what I need to describe this system. What else could I do or would I want to do? It's kind of the whole reason we went with the constrained set of equations. And one more simplification to these terms over here.
Just in terms of,
yeah, so I can write the friction force, right? So I know that friction force, coefficient of friction, magnitude of that guy. I can write it that way. And of course, I could substitute that into those equations and have it just in terms of the normal. There we go.
So what's different between this and what we did Tuesday, where we said we needed to do the Lagrange multiplier?
Yeah. So here you need to know explicitly what the normal force is in order to be able to define F. The Lagrange multiplier, you're just looking for a generic kind of constraint force.
We didn't know.
We don't know direction or anything, right? So you'll see this method, in fact, the section of the book that talks about explicitly including these constraint forces is one that's directed at dealing with friction, and particularly Coulomb friction, which is, this is Coulomb friction. There's other models of friction where you might could do something different. This is just one way to model friction, and it works pretty well most of the time. Real friction is way more complicated than that, just so you as our materials friend in the room probably could tell us. In fact, there's a whole field of engineering dedicated to that, tribology. Okay, questions about that? Yeah, total time, you just need a total time derivative. Beta's constant, yeah. L's constant. So, yeah. Other questions?
If we added like friction at B.
Mm-hmm. You're going to need another generalized coordinate. I would maybe do S and then some perpendicular direction there.
Okay.